This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Yeah, Anna was moving very fast today or not on this January 2nd. Mike Dettelier joins us now, WWL NFL analyst. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, Tommy. Stayed up late last night, watched the Rebels upset Georgia, and that was a great game. Oh, compared to the other two, yeah, it had to be.
Kirby Smart, he's an excitable individual, isn't he?
To say the least. He was like that when he was a former assistant coach at LSU years ago. Him and Will Muschamp, man, it was like live wire, no insulation on both of them. They were much younger, but, man, Kirby still has a lot of fire to him. But
I was watching a game with my kid, and I was saying, I wonder what he's saying. I just wonder what he's saying all the time. What is he screaming at? What could he have to say that much? What is he saying?
I have a couple friends of mine that have been referees. They tell me it's a constant chatter with Kirby. Constant with
him. He ran out on the field, almost called holding himself in the first quarter, wasn't it, or the first half sometime?
It was in the I think that was in the third quarter when Kawan Lacy made the run.
That's what it was.
He cut the corner, and it looked to be some holding, but man, they had a couple missed calls. They had one obvious face mask call. How could you miss that? I mean, his head jerked completely around. And no flags. So it was a good game.
Before we get to the Saints, let me get to the college football playoffs with you. How do you see this playing out?
Man, Miami and Ole Miss. If you'd have had that on the dance card, you'd be able to cash in pretty good money. Miami, their defense and their front is really what won from up front, the more physical team. And, man, they beat up Ohio State. Wasn't no beating. Yep. They beat them up. And
as did Indiana with Alabama.
Man, Indiana, they just kind of moved pieces all around. And Mendoza was hot. When you catch a hot quarterback, just like what Georgia caught Trinidad Chambliss, you're in trouble. You can say, well, we'll do this and that defensively, but sometimes just that player at that moment gets really hot throwing the football, and you got some difficulties in trying to match up against them. But Indiana, certainly, when you talk about, you know, I've heard many people say, well, the Blue Bloods are going to dominate college football now. Mm. Oh, yeah? Ole Miss? Indiana? Miami of Florida, when's the last time they've been relevant? I mean, you got to go back quite a few years before they have been a relevant team in college football. And then certainly Oregon coming in over the last 4 or 5 years, they have been a really, really top-flight team in college football. I think one of the best coaches in college football in Dan Lanning there. And they funded well. That guy who owns Nike, when he cuts you a check, it won't bounce.
See, and I got my little bracket here, and I got equals parity is what I got here. And I think with the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness, are we going to see parity in college football? Not with James Madison. I'm not saying that. Or with Tulane, no disrespect. But are we going to see parity among big programs like that?
It's going to mirror the NFL. Mm-hmm. I think in a lot of ways where
the so-called blue bloods, their blood ain't going to be as blue anymore.
It ain't going to be as blue anymore.
It's going to be green, right?
Yeah, it's all about green. But even spending money, you got to make the right decisions on who you bring in. And you look at where Texas Tech started and them getting to this point, and they got beat yesterday by Oregon. But okay, you got to make the right personnel decisions. You can have an all-star team, doesn't mean that it all mixes well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. But I think for a lot of people who dislike the way the system is, and okay, there should be certain guardrails put on it right now that's not in place. Mm-hmm. I think college football, from an interest standpoint, is higher now than it's ever been mm-hmm. in our lifetime. Oh, that goes to show you, you know, what college football brings to the table, and you can change a lot of different values and variances in it, and it's still such a great sport to watch.
It's hard to tell in a way, and bear with me here, when you look at the level of competition between the two, and I know it's different on an NFL field, but I guess that goes back to parity. It's hard to tell the difference. The talent is so close now with the upper programs. You with me?
I think you're right. And it's somewhat like that in the NFL. Mm-hmm. The only thing in the NFL, that mantra of any given Sunday does still come into play. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you can have a not a really good game and somebody plays his best and they end up upsetting you. That happens in the NFL every week. Mm-hmm. Every week that it happens. So I think what you see is a little bit of an expansion in the college football ranks. Years ago, the way the system was, an Ole Miss, a Texas Tech, the way Miami's season played out, they didn't win the ACC. Mm-hmm. Okay. To get to where they're at, you wouldn't have seen that. But you will today. And when they expand this to 16, it'll be even more so. But I do think that similar to the NFL, that you will see a team almost get in like a wild card mm-hmm. and end up winning it in. Archie Manning and I, we spoke about that a lot. And he told me, Mike, he said, one day they're going to have a 9-3 football team, finish the season, don't win their conference, but they get in and they win it all. It's just like a wild card team in the NFL.
But to be clear, you're not talking about a James Madison here or anything like that.
No. But, you know, like say a 9-3 Big Ten SEC team get in and they get hot and all of a sudden – everything falls into place.
Again, no disrespect to Mike Haas and James Madison. I just want to clear that up. 8:21, let me take a break. We'll talk Saints when we come back. I don't know who they're going to throw the ball to. They're hurting at the receiver. I mean, we can talk about it when we come back with Chris Olave in a hospital. 8:21, traffic now, WWL. 8:25, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Mike Dettelier, Chris Olave in the hospital. With a blood clot in his lung, was that necessarily, Mike, I don't know if you know or not, I shouldn't have asked you this because I don't know if you know, but is that a result of contact or was that just something?
I'm not real sure, Tommy. I mean, I know it's serious unless they catch it quickly.
Yeah.
It could turn into something serious. And
yeah, the only way it's minor is if it's somebody else's.
Yeah, it's always that way. Yeah, just like when I had my knee surgery. Oh, man, they do that every day. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But they didn't do it to me.
They do it to me now, exactly. Every day. So it's completely different, right?
Yeah, it's a different story. But they caught it early, and, you know, it takes a couple of weeks before finally that blood clot kind of clears in your lung. And so
we wish
you
him
can get it
best.
A lot of different ways, but wish him well.
Yeah, so let's talk about, you know, the Tyler Shuck's been a big story, but who's he going to throw the ball to?
Well, I would assume Kevin Austin is going to get a lot of targets to Sunday, along with Dante Pettis, who has seen playing time. And he made a big play last week. The only thing is he fumbled the football when he got near the end zone. A couple of Saints had a chance to pick it up and didn't do it. And Mason Tipton also. I would look at two, maybe getting the running backs more involved, if it's Audric Estime, Taysom Hill. Juwan Johnson, who's been a big target, I think he'll get a few more. But yeah, your wide receiver core is really limited at this stage, and you want to try to play a little bit of keep away from the Falcons, because what they want to do is wear you down running the ball with Bijan Robinson, because Bijan's hot now as a back, and you get that particular part. That's who they want to feed the football to. And again, it's similar to in sports. When somebody gets on a roll like that, they'll piece together two or three unbelievable games. And you know one thing in Atlanta, fortunately for them, Arthur Blank has a lot more patience with coaches and front office people than I do. Because it has not been good for them. They're in football purgatory every year. Six, seven wins every year, every year, every year. They can't get over the hump.
We could be playing Kirk Cousins, right?
Yeah, and Kurt has had some really good games against the Saints. We've talked about it all week. Bobby always brings up the fact, man, Mikey, I used to sleep so well knowing I was playing against certain teams that I had played well against in the past. You feel confident that, man, I know them really well. I can throw the football against them. It doesn't matter if who's the head coach, whatever. It is something about one certain opponent. You go back to his days in Washington, and then with the Vikings, and then with Atlanta. He has had really good games against New Orleans. The thing with Kirk now is he's not moving around much. Mm-hmm. Man, I would try to blitz him in right up the middle. That's where I think you can affect him and make him throw a little bit awkward, off balance. That 'cause if you give him time to throw the football, man, he's going to carve you up. Still that good.
How do you contain Bijan?
You can stack the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. But, you know, part of this, too, is just making sure that your linemen and linebackers don't get out of their angles.
Yep.
Put them up front and make sure that they stay in that lane, because if you give him that little crease, he's going to take off running. And also, too, his ability to get yardage after first contact. That is something that's really special about him. I see it with Jeremiah Love with Notre Dame. Similar a type player in college today. But, man, he's a tough guy and also can catch the football really well coming out the backfield.
I'll go first. Saints win this one with a strong defensive effort, low-scoring game. As usual, walk-off field goal. Thoughts?
I would say I agree with you, and even without Olave, I think somehow, some way, the Saints get it done and Charlie Smith ends it with a field goal.
75-yarder. We'll see.
I don't know about that, but
I did go a little bit too far there.
Yeah, but, man, that Ole Miss kicker's pretty doggone good,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Oh, I'm telling you, man. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, brother.
Appreciate it. All right, we'll talk to John Curatola when we come back from the World War II Museum about the flying fighting tigers. What? We'll explain when we return. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 8:45, quarter till 9. I've been looking forward to this. Dr. John Curatola joins us now, who is the Samuel Murray Stone Senior Historian at the National World War II Museum, a retired U.S. Marine. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
Thank you so much. I want to hear the story of that. We've been talking about fighting tigers since September. Let's talk about the flying fighting tigers and Claire Lee Chennault. Tell me the story however you find it best to explain this to us, sir. Please.
Yeah, Claire Chennault's really an interesting character. He was really born here in Texas, but he spent some of his childhood in Gilbert and Waterproof, Louisiana. He's born in 1890. He goes to LSU for a year for ROTC training. But then when World War One comes around, he enlists in the Army, and eventually he's sent to flight school and earns his wings. But he doesn't actually fight in the First World War. But what he does is he goes into pursuit aviation, what we would call fighters today. And he's a big advocate of fighters at a time when bomber aircraft are in vogue. And he's a big advocate for pursuit aviation. And as a result, he finds himself at loggerheads with Army leadership at that time, who was pushing for bombers. So as a result, he continues his career, but eventually retires from the U.S. Army. But he's recruited by the Kuomintang in China under Chiang Kai-shek to evaluate their air force. And Once the Japanese invade, he actually stands up the Flying Tigers, as you mentioned before, mm-hmm. that are the first Americans to really engage the Japanese in the Pacific before Pearl Harbor comes around.
Let me talk about the changes in air warfare between World War One and World War Two, or in its infancy, because, you know, you think about the planes with the struts on the wings and so forth, and what was air combat like then, and then how did it slowly evolve into, as you said, pursuit aviation?
Yeah, that's a great question. In the First World War,
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Or you have these funny things called airplanes, and people aren't quite sure what they're used for. Mm-hmm. Are they even worthy of the battlefield? And what they find out.
Let me interrupt for one second, Doctor, if I can interrupt for one second. We're talking about pretty small light aircraft here at this point, and fairly fragile or not?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that was the point, is are they battle worthy? Because airplanes have maybe 100 horsepower at the most. They're mm-hmm. very light. They're fabric covered. You know, they're made out of wood. And so can they sustain themselves in a battlefield? And what they find out in the First World War, that airplanes are great for observation and looking at the enemy. And by the same token, you don't want the enemy looking at you. So we start to develop we call pursuit aircraft to shoot down those observation aircraft. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they realize, hey, maybe you could strap on some rockets or some small bombs on airplanes and drop those on the enemy. And we can even build bigger planes that can bomb the enemy behind their front lines. And so you have this evolution of air power in the First World War that kind of proves itself, but the First World War shapes aviation more than aviation shaped the First World War.
So, if I can jump in for a second, you have this new technology, you have this evolution that goes on and says, okay, well, how can we use it to more effectively defend ourselves and promulgate a war? And then, how can we improve the technology, improve the aircraft with an eye towards making us a more effective fighting force? Is that accurate?
Yeah, that is. It's completely accurate. And what you see towards that end is a development of very specific kinds of airplanes, fighters, bombers, cargo aircraft, observation aircraft. And the interwar years between 1920 and the 1930s, you see aviation growing by leaps and bounds. Now you have, 700, 800, 1,000 horsepower engines during the interwar years. Air races are big. And you have the development of high-octane fuels for better engine performance. And so these interwar years are very, very important in the development of aircraft technology.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Fascinating conversation with Dr. John Curalta, nice enough to spend some time with us. Samuel Zamore Stone, senior historian at the National World War II Museum, a retired U.S. Marine himself. And we're talking about Claire Chennault, who grew up in Louisiana, went to LSU, helped fight Japanese forces prior to World War II. Is that accurate, Doc?
They start setting up operations in 1941. Just before Pearl Harbor.
All right. So we'll continue to talk about the Flying Tigers, and I guess they were named after the LSU Tigers or not?
That I'm not quite sure of.
Well, let's go with that.
Okay, we'll go with that, sir.
For me, we'll go with it. Not you, because you have credentials. But for me, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. 8:51, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 8:56, 4 till 9. I got some nice feedback over the holidays at different events I went to from listeners saying they loved hearing different types of things like we're doing right now, as opposed to You know, the same old political stuff with the Republicans, the Democrats, the blah, 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 blah. And there's a place for that. I'm not knocking that. But we just take a different approach here in the morning and try to give you a different taste of a lot of different things. And one of which is talking to John Curatola, Dr. John Curatola, Samuel Zamora Stone, senior historian at the National World War II Museum, retired U.S. Marine, about Claire Chennault, who grew up in Louisiana, went to LSU, died at Ochsner Hospital in New Orleans from the damn cigarettes that they handed out in to the military. And we're talking about the Flying Tigers. When it came, early aircraft battle, what was your rank, sir, in the military?
I retired as a lieutenant colonel.
The colonel. So when it comes to air to ground, from ground to air defense, was it just like small arms that they would shoot at these light planes, fabric-covered planes? That was it?
Yeah, exactly. What happens is the development of anti-aircraft artillery and air defenses really evolves during the First World War, but more so in the interwar years and early on in the war. Anti-aircraft artillery becomes more and more important as aircraft establish themselves more and more on the battlefield. And in the interwar years, you start to develop not only heavy caliber weapons like the 88 millimeter that the Germans will make famous, but they also start to include radar and radar direction, and the fact that you can now vector fighters to incoming aircraft. So you have this development of integrated air defenses during the interwar years, like you see in the Battle of Britain with their chain home radar systems. And the Germans will also, of course, develop that as well during the combined bomber offensive when British and American bombers are hitting German cities and areas in occupied Europe.
Will drones ever take the place of fighter jets or bombers completely, or at least human piloted aircraft?
Yeah, as a private pilot myself, God, I hope not. I think.
Well, I was going to ask you what Chennault would have thought of drones, et cetera.
I think that they certainly have a place, and future warfare. I think is going to include that, as we see already, you know, in with the war with Russia, and I think that particular war right now that's going on, or the conflict, is indicative of what we're going to see in the future. Much like in the 1930s, you had the Spanish Civil War that was a harbinger of weapons for the Second World War. I think what you're seeing in the Ukraine is indicative of that as well.
Quick word about the World War II Museum while we have you, Doctor.
Yeah.
Just in general, why people should go?
Yeah, the mission of the museum here is why the war was fought, how it was won, and what it means today. And it certainly still resonates in our contemporary global environment. Just because it was over 80 years ago doesn't mean it does not affect our contemporary world. It does significantly.
We're lucky to have it. I'm going to tell you what, I think every American owes it to their country to go to D.C. at least one time and a World War II museum one time, and you don't have to get on a plane to go to the World War II museum if you're here already. Thank you, Dr. Colonel. I appreciate your time. Have a good day. And Happy New Year.
You too. Bye-bye.
You bet. When we take a break, we'll talk to Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, talking about crime. And then we're going to have another special little feature for you about Tulane and 8 million fish in a World War II bunker.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.